be with me this morning as I go through my thoughts and ideas and time, help them come out and be conveyed to everyone here this morning that same way. We appreciate everything that you have done for us and the guidance that you give us. In Christ's name, amen. I've changed this lesson this about 16 times since I've been here this morning. I've got some really good ideas or heard some comments, and you know, you're like, oh wait, that comment would fit great or relate great into this topic right here. So we'll see if I can which of those I can remember and if I can stick them in the right spots or not. But this is you know, it's always a challenge to me when you're trying to pick a topic, when you're not given a topic. If you're given a topic, you know, it's the challenge is to find the ammunition or the story to make it interesting. But when you just don't necessarily have a topic and they just say, we want you to speak or send a message or give a message, it's always kind of a challenge to pick out a topic. But usually I can go back to some basic things that I like to, that I do deal with every day. And so that's what I'm going to base on. It's more of a, if nothing else, a motivational kind of a message with some scripture that kind of goes along and kind of puts things in perspective. But I'm going to start off with the name of the message this morning is Start Feeding the Good Wolf. Start Feeding the Good Wolf. An old Cherokee chief was teaching his grandson about life. A fight is going on inside of me, he said to the boy. It's a terrible fight, and it's between two wolves. One is evil. He is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, lies, false pride, self-doubt, and ego. And the other is good. He is joy, peace, love, hope, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. The same fight is going on inside of you and inside every other person too. The grandson thought about it for a minute and then asked his grandfather, which wolf would win? The old chief simply replied, the one you feed. Whatever you decide to feed will grow. Focusing on something causes your brain to flag anything related as important. If your default is towards negativity, you will always see the glass half empty. If your default is towards the positive, you'll always see the glass half full. Start feeding the good wolf. I've got three topics that I've got marked that I'd like to discuss this morning or bring out. And topic number one is contagious. Your actions can be contagious to others. Now, we all know that the flu, for instance, is contagious through germs, whether it's shaking hands or an uncovered sneeze or germs in the air. The flu is contagious through germs. But there's other things that are contagious, and it's a little hard to pinpoint exactly why they're contagious, such as yawning and laughter. You see somebody yawn, it's contagious. You can't really pinpoint why. And if somebody's laughing, you can't help but put a smile on their face. It's contagious. Those are not viruses or bacteria, but people inherit the tendency to mirror other people and the actions of other people that surround us. My 9-year-old daughter and I were flying from the home in Charlotte, North Carolina, to spend a week with my husband in Miami, Florida. Mike had been in Florida for 5 months working on an internet startup company. We were excited about the trip because we had seen him only 5 times in 5 months, and Callie had missed her dad terribly. As usual, on the Charlotte to Miami flight, the plane was totally full. I had noticed to a troop of Boy Scouts at the gate and commented to my daughter that if anything happened, we would be okay with all those scouts on the flight. Little did I know, because we did not get Little did I know, because we did not get our boarding passes until we arrived at the gate, Callie and I could not get seats together and were separated by the aisle. That wasn't such a big deal, except that Callie was nervous about the trip and had counted on me reading to her the whole way. Trying to read across the aisle would be a challenge. When the two passengers who shared my row boarded the plane, I asked if they would consider switching seats with Callie and me so that we could be together and that she could sit next to the window. They refused, saying that we should stay in their assigned seats. Meanwhile, a mother and her three children were in a panic, several rows ahead of us. There had been a mistake in their boarding passes. The whole family had been split up. The passengers in her row also refused to move elsewhere. The mother could hold her baby, but her six-year-old son and his older brother had been scattered around the plane. She was very concerned about the younger boy sitting with strangers. She was in tears, yet nobody offered to help her. Suddenly, the scout leader stood up and said, "Ma'am, I think we can help you." He then spent 5 minutes rearranging his group so that adequate space was available for the family. The boys followed his direction cheerfully and without complaint, and the mother's relief was obvious. Callie, however, was beginning to panic at the thought of not being next to her to the window or her mother. I told her that there wasn't anything I could do. We would have to sit where we were. Amazingly, the man sitting next to the scoutmaster, not a scout himself, turned around to me and asked, "Would you and your daughter like our seats?" referring to himself and the scoutmaster. He said he was cramped in the window seat and would really prefer the aisle. We traded seats and continued our trip, very much relieved to be together and watch the scenery from Callie's window seat. That man may not have offered his seat if the scouts hadn't done so for the mom and her children. Kindness is contagious, and good deeds beget good deeds. Your actions can also be contagious to yourself. A good example, last weekend, I played in a golf tournament, 2-day golf tournament. So pretty much starting Friday after lunch through Sunday evening, I was on the golf course. Now, when Monday morning came, do you think it was easy to get up and go to work? 2.5 days on the golf course, not really being that productive, was contagious, and getting up Monday morning is a challenge. Now, at the same time, I can find myself getting to work, and if I can make myself get into a routine and try to be as productive and accomplish things, it gets easier to do so and more motivated to do so. I've got a friend that actually works for a company out of town, and he's in sales, and they're very lenient on their hours. It's a commission-only kind of sales, so you've got to be really self-motivated. And he is the kind of person that can be one extreme or the other. If he ever takes a day off, like this Monday, and he says, "You know what, I'm going to go fishing, or I'm going to go do whatever," well, the odds are he's going to take 2 days off, and maybe 3 days, because it's contagious. With him, he can have a hard time motivating himself to change paths. But at the same note, when he's on a roll making sales, I mean, he's on a roll. And you get motivated to double-check your database for buyers or whoever you're working with, and it's contagious. So your actions can be contagious to yourself. Now, I'm 41 years old. It really wasn't until the last few months that I actually got motivated to read the Bible, to study the Bible. I've been around the Bible all my life, raised in the church, but if I read the Bible, it's maybe because I had to read scripture at church that day or whatever. But anytime, like for instance, I cannot hear a chapter one time or a verse one time, and it just does not sink into me. I mean, I've got to hear, I remember this morning in class when Brendan read the last part of the chapter we were on, and after about the first half of the sentence, man, I found myself somewhere else. I mean, I just couldn't keep up, and I've got a simple mind, and a lot of the Bible is just confusing enough to me that I've got to really look at it, read it multiple times, and then read all the commentary at the bottom of my Bible. And once I do that, it's contagious for me. I want to keep, I mean, I find myself looking up stuff in other chapters and where it's related and trying to figure out, well, why is this like this? Why is this like this? And that's contagious. And it's a great feeling. I mean, it's exciting for me. And a big part of that was probably because, I don't know, a few months ago we started having a men's Bible study at Asher's Cafe on Wednesday morning. And with having the group of guys that we've got showing up there, I mean, last week we had 9 people there at 6:15, and we're going over Romans. We actually just finished Romans. And when you have that kind of turnout to some of the Bible studies, that was contagious. I mean, when we're getting around the table, we're discussing, and we might get totally off topic, but we're all discussing something that has to do with our faithfulness. Or our lives and how we can help each other. And that's contagious and that's exciting. And, you know, until a few months ago, it wasn't really happening for me. I mean, I felt like I was a faithful man, but it's just weird how all these chains of debt kind of fall into place and how that's contagious. Topic 2, perspective. This is a good one, perspective. Had gone to catch a train. This is April 1976 in New York City. I was a bit early for the train because I had gotten the time of the train wrong. I went to get myself a newspaper, do a crossword, and a cup of coffee and a packet of cookies. I went and sat at a table and picture this table at a train station, one of those long benches, a long table, so it's not uncommon to sit very close to a total stranger to share a table. Okay, here's the table, newspaper, cup of coffee, and my packet of cookies. There's a guy sitting opposite of me, perfectly ordinary looking guy wearing a business suit, carrying a briefcase. It didn't look like he was going to do anything weird. What he did was this. He suddenly leaned across, picked up a packet of cookies, tore it open, took one out, and ate it. There's nothing in our background, upbringing, or education that teaches us how to deal with someone who in broad daylight has just stolen your cookies. But in the end, I did what any red-blooded American would do. I ignored it. And I stared at the newspaper, took a sip of coffee, and tried to do a clue in the newspaper. Couldn't do anything, and thought, what am I going to do? In the end, I thought, I'll just have to go for it. And I tried very hard not to notice the fact that the package was already mysteriously open. I took out a cookie for myself, and I thought, that settled him. But it hadn't, because a moment or two later, he did it again. He took another cookie. Having not mentioned it the first time, it somehow even was harder to raise the subject for the second time. I mean, excuse me, I couldn't help but notice, I mean, that really doesn't work. We went through the whole packet of cookies like this. And when I say the whole packet, I mean that there was only about 8 cookies, but it felt like a lifetime. He took one, I took one. He took one, I took one. Finally, when we got to the end, we exchanged meaningful looks, and then he walked away, and I breathed a sigh of relief and stepped back. A moment or two later, the train was coming in, so I tossed back the rest of my coffee, stood up, picked up the newspaper, and underneath the newspaper were my cookies. So the next time you're convinced that you know everything, you might step back and realize that just because you think you're in the right, you may not be. You could be in the wrong. That's a great story with, talking about perspective, because you're talking about somebody that's condemning somebody and stirred up, and just picture what the other guy was, you know. I mean, he was the one that actually had more rights to be stirred up. Another story on perspective. Once upon a time, five blind men came upon an elephant. "What is this?" asked the first one, who had run headfirst into his side. "It's an elephant," said the elephant's keeper, who was sitting on a stool cleaning the elephant's harness. "Wow, so this is an elephant. I've always wondered what elephants are like," said the man, running his hand as far as he could, reaching up and down the elephant's side. "Why, it's just like a wall, a large, warm wall." "What do you mean, a wall?" said the second man, wrapping his arms around the elephant's leg. "This is nothing like a wall. You can't reach around a wall. This is more like a pillar." "Yeah, that's what it is. An elephant is exactly like a pillar." "A pillar? Strange kind of pillar," said the third man, stroking the elephant's trunk. "Too thin for one thing, and it's too flexible for another. If you think this is a pillar, I don't want to go to your house. This is more like a snake. It's wrapping around my arm, and an elephant's just like a snake." "Snakes don't have hair," said the fourth man in disgust, pulling the elephant's tail. "You are closer than others, but I'm surprised that you missed the hair. This isn't a snake, it's a rope. Elephants are exactly like ropes." "I don't know what you guys are thinking," the fifth man cried, waving the elephant's ear back and forth. "It's as large as a wall, all right, but thin as a leaf, and no more flexible than any piece of cloth this size should be. I don't know what's wrong with all of you, but no one except a complete idiot can mistake an elephant for anything except a sail." And as the elephant moved on, they stumbled along down the road, arguing more passionately as they went, each sure that he and he alone was right and all the others were wrong, whereas the truth is that an elephant is an elephant. How many times do we argue about details of things when we should step back and look at a bigger picture? I've got very few responsibilities at my house, and that's the way I like it. But one of the things that I do occasionally do, actually probably, in my opinion, a little more than my wife, but I may disagree, is load and unload the dishwasher. And, you know, our dishwasher, I guess, is like everybody else's for the most part. You got two levels, the top level and bottom level. In my mind, the glasses and the smaller bowls go on the top level, and the plates and the plasticware or big bowls and the silverware go on the bottom. So when I open up the dishwasher and I open up the bottom rack, and there's a glass right in the middle of the plate go, I see that as an issue. That's a problem. That's not where that goes. I go from the top, and we're going to get this thing organized and have this thing loaded efficiently. But I've never said anything to Sarah about that. Because I know, if I say that, I'm sure she'll say, "Well, you just take care of it all the time. I mean, that's your job." Because it doesn't bother her. That's her organization. But the big picture is, the dishwasher function is to wash the dishes. Now, whether it's a glass on the bottom or a glass on the top, doesn't really matter. I mean, why does it bother me? I don't know. It's going to continue to bother me, I promise you. But I'll get over it. But there's a bigger picture there. Sometimes you may get under the impression that someone is doing wrong to you, like the cookie story, when actually, you may be the one in the wrong. Or your perspective on where you are at in your relationship with God may be different than someone else, like an elephant story. If you're both right there, keep an open mind there may be a bigger picture. If you think you've had a bad day, and you think your perspective is skewed on, it's in the negative side of where it should be, you need to read the book of Job. It's funny because I had no clue. I mean, I've heard of Job, but I had no clue about Job. But I don't know, it seems like a couple months ago, I think at one of our Asher's Bible studies, it was brought up. And just kind of instinctively, I decided I want to kind of go in there and take a look at it. And you're talking about a guy, okay, you think you had a bad day, you read Job, and you're talking about a guy that is the richest of that area, richest man in that area, super faithful. I mean, he is a godly man. He fears God and wants to shun Satan. And he's got 1,000 sheep, 2,000 sheep in this pasture. He's got 2,000 camels in this pasture. He's got livestock scattered everywhere. He is a rich man, very prosperous. And he's got, I think, 7 sons and 3 daughters. One day, Satan and God were talking. And Satan was saying, hey, you know, Job is down there. Of course he's happy. I mean, he's a rich man. Look at all the stuff he has. Why wouldn't he be happy? Why wouldn't he be faithful? But Satan's like, you know what? I think I can get him to curse you. And God's like, you know, I'll tell you what. Give it a try. You know, and at first he's like, you can do anything, you have control of Job, but you can't touch Job. So, and the way it reads is, you know, Job's sitting there one day at his house, and all of a sudden, a servant comes, starts knocking on the door, and Job goes out there. And the servant's like, the north pasture, the 10,000 sheep, or whatever it was, some rustlers came in, and they stole them all, and they're gone, and they killed all the servants, and I'm the only one who survived. And before he gets through telling Job what's going on, another servant's running in from this direction. All the ox in this pasture have been stolen or killed. You know, a fire came through and they're all killed. And all the servants, I'm the only one to survive, come tell you. And this happened like 3 or 4 times in different pastures. And then you got, and you know, Job's sitting there the whole time and these servants are coming in. And the last one comes in, well, your kids were having a big birthday party at this other house, and a desert storm came rolling in and blew the house over. And they're all dead. I mean, this is all within a matter of minutes. And it talks about how Job reacted, and he stripped down, and he hit the dirt, and he just, he prayed. I mean, he worshiped to God. He's like, you know, it's like, wow, I mean, this is, he's got all the reason in the world to curse God and say, why is this happening to me? And Satan's just scratching his head going, man, what? I can't believe this. And he goes, God, okay, that didn't work, but I think this will. I'm going to give me the opportunity to touch Job. Let me put an illness on him. And he will sure curse you. After all this, he's going to curse you, no doubt. And God says, bust loose, see what you got. So he goes in there and he's sick. He's got sores all over him. And even to the point where Job's wife is like, just curse God, commit suicide. You know, this is ridiculous. And he never did it. And even like Job's friends, and this is where I kind of, I mean, all that is amazing. I mean, it's really hard to understand. I mean, you can just sit there and say, yeah, I understand what happened there. But you really don't. I mean, not so you got something that extreme. That's amazing. But, and he's got all these friends that are trying to justify to him, say, hey, you must have sinned, or, you know, they've got all these ideas of why this is happening to Job. And, you know, and they're trying to understand, and then it talks about how then God comes in, and it talks about how, you know, you're a human. You don't have the capability of understanding. You can't justify everything. You just gotta have faith in me. And God even mentions that God then brings him to an understanding that believers don't always know what God is doing in their lives. And that's a pretty great message there, because sometimes you're having a bad day in our nature is you gotta justify why things are going good or why they're not going good, when in reality you just have to have faith. And really Job kept that. As a matter of fact, at the end, he admits that, I don't understand, it's not, all I can say is I'm faithful to God. And then God ends up blessing with twice as much as he had before. So it's pretty interesting I guess our perspective should be, we don't always have to understand what God's doing in our lives. We just kind of keep a positive perspective. And another good story about a farmer. Once upon a time, there was an old farmer who had worked his crops for many years. One day, his horse ran away. Upon hearing the news, his neighbors came to visit. Such bad luck, they said sympathetically. Perhaps, said the farmer. The next morning, the horse returned, bringing with it three other wild horses. What great luck, the neighbors exclaimed. Perhaps, replied the old man. The following day, his son tried to ride one of the untamed horses, was thrown, and broke his leg. The neighbors again came to offer their sympathy put on this misfortune. Perhaps, said the farmer. The day after, military officials came to the village to draft young men into the army. Seeing that the son's leg was broken, they passed him. The neighbors congratulated the farmer on how well things have turned out. Perhaps, said the farmer. We've all experienced where the curse turns into a blessing, rejection turns into redirection, and the unanswered prayer is the best thing that could have happened to you. It's important to have a foundational belief that keeps you composed to appreciate and celebrate the good and to process trials knowing that they soon shall pass. Have an open mind, shoot for a positive perspective, start feeding the good wolf. Topic number 3. Man, this is going along pretty good. I thought, man, this is about a 5-minute deal, but already going later. Topic number 3, real quick. It's one of my favorite topics. It's the power of a positive attitude. Do you think that you are a positive person? Because a positive attitude can improve your health, enhance your relationships, increase your chances of success, add years to your life. Number 1 and 4 there, improve your health, add years to your life. The first thing I thought about with that was that when my dad first got sick, and I remember at some point during all that, there was a time that we had talked to a doctor, and I'm going to kind of put his pieces together the best I can remember, but I at some point, and I think obviously my dad had some sort of relationship with this doctor or had seen him more than once or something like that, and once we kind of figured out the severity of the situation, it's like, okay, what options do we have? How long do we have to work with? If we go this route, we do surgery and chemo compared to if we don't do it, or blah, blah, blah. And pretty much, it was pretty interesting because the doctor had said that the book said, with no treatment, you got 6 months. With treatment, you got 12 or 14 months. But he said, that's what the book says. And then the doctor said, they don't take into account your positive attitude. Absolutely. And then here we are, 15 or so months later, doing good. But that was, I guess, really neat for me that the doctor even had that point of view. It pays to be positive. And actually, it was funny because this whole little section that I researched when I was doing the research, it had hit on some negative items, but the whole point of it was how to get to the positive side. And I had the negative items on here at first, to go with first, and then go to the positive. Then I man, I got depressed going over the negative items, so I'm going to take them out. So there's several ways to adopt a positive attitude, and I hope this some of this kind of sinks in with you. I try to use it in my daily life, and did pretty well for the most part, I feel like. But first of all, surround yourself with positive people. If you're around positive people, again, it's contagious. And as far as the negative people, if you get too close to a drowning victim, there's a good chance they're going to grab you and pull you down with them. So surround yourself by positive people. But also be positive yourself. If you don't want to hang around negative people, what makes you think other people do? A pretty interesting part about being positive yourself is that that came to my mind was that, professional sports in general, but golf is kind of where I'm at. One of the visits about ours, you know, there's actually some kind of thing. Golf is a mind game, first of all, a big time mind game. And so all these professional athletes have these, you know, golf doctors and psychologists that help them. And it's very pretty obvious because you can have a guy that can have the worst round. You know, of course, the ones that have the best round and the worst round are the ones that want to interview. But the guy with the worst round, he can have one of the worst rounds he's ever had, but he'll still come up with a positive response. Saying, you know what? I made a few mistakes. I misjudged a few circumstances, but I feel like my swing's really coming around. I've changed a few things. I really feel like I ended the round on a positive note. I mean, that's a positive attitude. And you will, even in football, and most of the time, or basketball, those guys always seem to have a positive attitude for the most part when they're speaking in an interview, which I think is a neat thing, even though that some of them might be a little bit of denial. But being positive with yourself, it's contagious, and it kind of helps you be a positive person. And also anticipate the best outcome. I mean, you can use situations where you got problems going on, and you can say, you know what, this thing's falling apart. Or you can say, okay, we've got a challenge here. What can we do to pull this thing together? Kevin is the guy that works for me down there, and he's a real positive guy. I heard him say a great thing over the years, and basically it just refers to our office, is that, you know, we don't focus on the problems, we focus on the solutions. And with that, you've got to consciously resist negative thinking. If you come into a negative thought, you've got to, you know, gather yourself, you've got to recognize it first, and then you've got to try to change that thought around to be a positive situation so that you focus on the solutions, not on the problems. A good way also is to set achievable goals. Be one of those people that, I think on this one I was thinking about, when you're, instead of hitting, swinging for the fences to try to get a home run, when you're setting these goals, just try to hit a lot of singles instead of home runs. Because if you hit enough singles, you eventually might knock one out of the park. And then with that, it's kind of a deal where you're not making your goals too unachievable that can bring you down. You're trying to set goals that will, complement your positive attitude. My favorite part of this, and the last several ways to adopt positive mental attitude, my last one is count your blessings. It doesn't matter where you are or what you got going on, if you can somehow get to a point where if you're having a bad day of counting your blessings, I mean, if you can't help it, it's going to make you feel better. I had an awesome day yesterday with my two daughters, and we went fishing. I was, you know, well, first of all, I got a raw thumb from taking fish off the hook, and having two gutturals with one worm getting taken off by a little perch, didn't catch the hook, reeling in, and then, you know, it was constant busyness for me, but all in the midst of that, I was really, it came to my attention that it was a blessing to be there, and I thought about this part of this, and man, it was fun. And another thought I'm going to share real fast that popped in my mind is I was showing some property a couple weeks ago to a guy from the city, And we're driving down a dirt road, and there's a farmer driving down the dirt road as well on his Ranger, you know, with the rifle to the back of his Ranger and the gun rest. And that guy, the city guy, I didn't think anything about it, the city guy was looking at property and that guy was driving his Ranger down a public road with a rifle on the back. He said, man, how cool is this? You know? And then, he just thought that was an amazing thing. And I thought, you know what, this is, for me, it's the first time living in this part of the world. Where I didn't even see that kind of thing. And I take it for granted, I guess, but kind of put that in perspective. If you want to achieve happiness, better health, stronger relationships, and continued success, you may not have to look any further than the mirror. And this is a great thing. It's going to happen right here. The happiest people don't necessarily have the best of everything.